This is Waddle and Sylvie. Follow us on the gram at Waddle and Sylvie and at ESPN_Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
Hope you're having a great Thursday. Hope you're healthy and everything is going okay as we continue to navigate heading towards phase three in the city of Chicago here in a few days. Mayor announced that today. Baseball continues to fight amongst itself. Players against the owners, against a backdrop that it does not look good optically. But even still, we're taking sides. I've been very, very honest and open that I am pro-player and that I feel like the owners are using the players to get what they want and using the backdrop to make them seem like they're greedy, and some people are buying it. We've discussed a fun topic regarding what we're going through right now, things that you will swear off going forward or things that will change in sports or in lifestyle that you will never do again. So the phone number to participate is 332-3776. Waddle is on vacation in South Carolina. He'll be back on Monday. So I'm here with Jeff Meller and Adam Abdallah as usual. Before I bring in Adam Amin, I want to just, you know, as I have told you guys over the last, now what is it, 3, 4, 5 weeks about my fight here with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. Last Friday was the first day that I had my chemotherapy. I continue to navigate like the new normal, and how you feel every single day could be a different day. Our T-shirts are on sale. The Sylvie Strong shirts are on sale right now at obviousshirts.com. We have raised, you have raised, over $20,000 for the V Foundation. Thanks to Joe and the Obvious Shirts, and every dollar that goes to the V Foundation, remember, goes towards cancer research. And like, there are moments where I'll open up a DM on Instagram or on Facebook, or I'll get a text and I'll be like, my world is totally cool and everything's going well. And then something will just stop me. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm so humbled to read what this listener wrote or what this friend wrote. And yesterday I had one of those moments where everything was great, and I'm reading the announcement that Adam Amin put out there. It happened, I think, at about 5:30, and I read it at, who has been a rising star for years, and he is no longer a rising star because he's already a superstar. Put out a three-page statement on how he's leaving ESPN and the opportunity that he has been given at this great network that we have all worked for so many years. And then at the end of this, something that is a huge part and a huge moment for his life, the selfless nature in which he flipped the script, and he mentioned for people that he is friends with or he has worked with, and how he's made a donation to the V Foundation, just absolutely blew me away. And to even get mentioned in such a huge milestone moment in his life, I'm humbled and I'm almost feel unworthy of such an honor. And it's my great pleasure to bring in our friend and a guy who started off here as an intern and is going to continue to do great things for Fox Sports going forward. He is Adam Amin. Adam, thank you, and I appreciate you doing what you did.
I feel humbled listening to you say that, man. That was far too kind of words that I, you know, for, especially for somebody like me. I'm speechless. I really am. I truly appreciate you saying that. It's obviously difficult for all you know, all of us who know you to have to watch you fight this, but it's inspiring to watch it because, you know, the tenacity and the toughness and just the good nature that you show. And when I see you and Mason put out the video every day to, yeah, you know, plug the show, it lifts me up, and I'm sure I'm not the only one who feels like that. I think an entire city feels that way too. And we appreciate you. Trust me. I know you know that from me, but I want everybody to hear that. We appreciate you a lot. And, you know, you and I have a pretty strong connection just based on where we started our careers and, you know, having interned for you guys, and then, you know, you being a Northwest Indiana guy or Northwest Iowa guy to start your career. Same deal for me. We bonded over that and so many other things. And it really, it was not difficult to do that for you and for Holly and Rod and for the late Edward Ashoff. It was my pleasure, and it's a privilege, and I thank you.
It's just one of the kindest, most selfless acts I've ever seen, Adam. And, you know, it's funny because we have the Adam Abdallah connection. I mean, nobody is a bigger fan of yours than Adam Abdallah. And I feel like we got to know you when Adam took over the show. And I'm like, so I knew you at the radio station, and I knew you were working for the network. And then Abdallah's like, you got to watch him. He's getting all these new assignments, and then like on the different game casts for the national championship. And there's Adam Amin on the sideline doing the national championship game. Was it like in a moment in one of those games where you're like, holy crap, I've really made it on the biggest stage? Or was it a different game when you look back on your ESPN career?
I think the first time it felt real, like I was part of it, like I was a real broadcaster, so to speak. I think it was probably the Final Four a couple of years ago, the women's Final Four, when Notre Dame won the national title and Arike Ogunbowale hit a game winner with a second to go in the semis and overtime to beat UConn, and then hit a buzzer beater to win the game in the national championship. And we had these kind of viral moments that would not have been viral if the moment itself wasn't so amazing. I mean, this athlete did something incredible, something that we may never see again, men's or women's in college basketball. So to have a legendary moment like that and be attached to it in some peripheral way, the way we were, because we had a camera on us, and you know, after everything is done, they go back and show us on camera, and it's kind of a fun thing to enjoy. That sticks. I had I'm sure this will be a bit of a name drop, but our friend and your friend of the show, Mike Tirico, called me last night, and we had a really great conversation. And obviously, I won't speak out of turn, but he gave me so much wonderful insight, and we discussed something like this, and. This is when it kind of felt real for me, because we were attached to something that had significant reach beyond just the fans who watch ESPN or the fans who like sports. It was a national story. Arike went on Ellen and Good Morning America, and she was like a star, and we were a little peripheral piece of that story. And that's when it really felt, and that was after, you know, 7.5 years of working at ESPN, that's when it really felt like a real thing. And that's when I kind of felt like, maybe I belong. Maybe I've got a real career in this, and that's when things kind of shifted.
Adam Amin joining us. Was it hard to make the decision to leave ESPN?
Yeah, gut wrenching. This is one of the things Mike did say to me was that, you know, I remember Mike was at ESPN for a quarter of a century, and then he left 4 years ago. And he gave me a great analogy and comparison. He's like, you're giving a little bit of your soul away, because it's my formative years. He got hired at ESPN when he was in his early 20s. I got hired at 24, and I had the connection with you guys, like we talked about, being an ESPN radio intern. And I loved ESPN, and I loved ESPN radio, and I wanted so badly to be a part of that. So when that shapes the formative years of my career, most of my 20s and my early 30s, when I'm kind of figuring out what it's like to be an adult and what it's like to be a professional in this business while still trying to navigate being an idiot kid, which I still am in a lot of ways, it's hard to give that piece of you away. So when I finally had to make the decision, it was not easy. Last night when I did decide to send that out, and the only reason I sent that out is because I got the email from like HR. HR was like, hey, we understand you're leaving the company on Sunday, and you read this like checklist of things that you have to do. I'm sure everybody who's moved to a different job has had to deal with something like this. And that's when it became a little bit real. And I thought, you know, this would be a nice time to say something. And it was not easy. It was a really hard decision, because it's a really special place to work.
You know, one of the topics, Adam, that we're talking about a lot, Waddle and me, is the new landscape that broadcasting is going to play in some of these games because of no fans. That not only are your voices the soundtrack of the games, but the roar of the crowd, it plays a huge role in this. Mm-hmm. And what will make up for that, whether it's more mic'd up people or fake noise, or what would you like to see as you've been sitting at home and kind of brainstorming going forward here when there are no fans in the stands?
Something I enjoyed about casually flipping through some soccer, and maybe Abdallah would speak to this, and Meller as well, being soccer guys, that, you know, watching the Bundesliga kind of go through their transition phase, them kind of adding their crowd noise from the stand, like piping in their crowd noise from the stadium with chants and things like that, maybe adding boos when, you know, the opposing team scores or something like that. I know it sounds weird. I know it feels weird. Maybe it's because I'm, you know, a video gamer and I play Madden, and it's, you can kind of control the audio of what you want to hear and don't want to hear. I feel more comfortable in a big setting when there is noise, when there is crowd noise. So I wouldn't mind it, whether it's, you know, the people at Fox during a, you know, during a baseball or football game piping in some noise, whether it's, you know, you're at a baseball game and that organ music plays that kind of makes you feel like you're at the ballpark. I wouldn't mind those things. I can't speak for every fan sitting on their couch and how they would feel about it. It's going to be awkward, right? No matter what, it's going to be strange. Whatever the new normal is, it's going to be unfamiliar and it's going to be foreign to all of our ears and eyes for a little while until we start to get used to it. And I don't think any idea right now is a bad idea. I think if you're ever going to experiment with, you know, pumped in crowd noise, synthetic noise for the broadcast, music in between plays, if you're doing a football game, this is the time to experiment. And I think together we'll kind of go by trial and error and figure out what fans are more comfortable with and what maybe they don't want to deal with.
I mean, if you're doing an NFL game, Adam, and there's no crowd, are you going to be, you know, raising your voice as much as you normally would raise your voice?
You know, I'm thinking back to, you know, we were just talking about our humble Iowa beginnings, days. Right? I'm
yeah.
thinking back to doing minor league baseball when there's nobody, you know, there's 200 people maybe on a Monday night at a minor league baseball game, and I'm sitting in the booth and I can kind of hear my voice echoing in the seats in front of me. And you just kind of have to deal with that. Your job is still to raise and lower and inflect your voice that to a point where it's translating the emotion of the game to a fan. Now, the crowd does have a lot to do with that. I do feel like the crowd lifts our voices a little bit. When we do feel like the crowd is getting up, we can get up as well. When the home team has a big play for a touchdown, naturally they're going to get loud and our voices will match that. When a home basketball team makes a big shot, our voice has to go up to match that a little bit. So in relativity, I don't think it's going to be that much different, but we will have to overall, I feel like, at least my philosophy, without really knowing what this is going to feel like, my philosophy is I'm going to have to overall lower the tone while still keeping it relative to what's happening in the game action, up and down and inflecting as necessary.
Before we let you go, is there anything that you, because of the pandemic, won't ever do again?
You know, I haven't thought about anything I won't do because I do feel like at some point we're going to get to a level of comfort, safety, and normalcy that all of us do feel like we're going to feel okay. I really do believe that. And I think for the most part, everything that we had before, we can feel comfortable with. But I know the caution that a lot of people are going to start taking is going to be heavy. It's going to take a while for everybody to feel 100% safe and normal across the board. It's going to be a while. And I think as long as we understand that, as long as we're aware of what each other is feeling about, you know, certain situations, whether it is being a little bit more aware of distancing when we go to the movies, or we're in line we're sitting at a bar outside, or we're going to a restaurant, just being a little bit more aware of each other. You know, we're not going to have to socially distance forever. We're going to be able to hug each other and handshake.
You're a hugger.
You know me. I'm a big hugger, and I express my appreciation for my friends and my loved ones in that fashion. And at some point, we're going to be able to do that again. But I also want to make sure that I'm just aware. Maybe that will be one of the positives of all of this. Maybe on the other side of this, we'll all be a little bit more aware of one another and think about each other in that sense a little bit more often. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing.
Proud of everything that you've done, Adam. You represent all of us here from Chicago. And keep on doing great things, and congratulations on all your success. It's something that you really deserve. Thank you.
Truly appreciate all you guys, boys. Seriously, thank you.
There you go. Adam Amin, really great guy, great broadcaster, better guy. And then again, he makes this announcement that he's leaving ESPN to go to Fox. And then he makes this donation to the V Foundation. And it was just an incredible act. All right. While we were talking about some NFL stuff earlier, I came up with a suggestion that I want to pitch to you, the listener, 312-332-3776, and Abdallah and Meller. And if there's anything that's on your mind, we're here for you as well. I'll bring that to you. A replay challenge for coaches to save themselves. That's coming up next.
Waddle and Sylvie.
Podcasts are ready on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Good response on Twitter here, guys. I asked people what they will never do again. And I agree with Adam. I mean, I believe once we settle back in and once we feel safe, and I think we're going to be cleaner than we've ever been, that we'll do mostly everything we've ever done before. But Aaron Handler says they'll never chant Fire Gar Packs again. So that's a good clean slate coming out of this for the Bulls.
But will you chant Fire Jim Boylan?
I don't think I'll have to.
Let's hope so.
Did I hear this correct? I saw someone tweet about it. I didn't hear the interview with Ramona Shelburne, and then I'll get to the NFL stuff. Did Ramona say again that she had an interview with Jerry Reinsdorf, and again, like, he was making it, like...
No, it's basically the same stuff that Cowley said, that Joe Cowley has said, that Jerry, that Reinsdorf has said that he likes Jim Boylan.
I don't know why,
but it's
so weird. I mean, you could just say goodbye to Phil Jackson after he won his sixth championship. You could interview Tim Floyd in the middle of an NBA finals while you're en route to winning your fourth championship. But yet you're like, Jim Boylan, cool. I like him. I mean, am I in bizarro world or what?
No, I just, you know, I think that he's a very look busy kind of guy, right?
Look busy kind of guy.
Yeah, like he looks very, you know, he's got a lot of tabs open. He looks like he's doing a lot of work, but in reality, he's just sitting there. Like he's really not doing anything. He's got no idea what he's doing.
Like, yeah, like try hard guy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The guy who looks like he's the hustle dork.
Yeah, he's the first guy in, but he's not doing anything.
I believe in baseball, they would call it eyewash.
Yes, that's good. All eyewash. Yeah.
All right. I mean, so you have a proposal, Sylvie, for us, for NFL owners.
All right. So here's what they did. Or they really didn't do anything. I mean, was there anything out of this vote today? They did not approve the 4th and 15 for the onside kick. But what they did do is they said that it was a huge failure where there is no way to challenge pass interference anymore. So even though that it wasn't good, like the league screwed that up the way they would review the pass interference calls. But at least the safety net was in place that if there was a totally egregious pass interference and it could cost someone a season, it could cost someone a game, you could still make the challenge. And if it was so over the top, you could do it. Now that's taken away, right? Isn't that's
correct? They have eliminated that. Yes.
So the Bears could be playing in week 16 and they could have a huge pass interference and it could totally cost them the season. And there is no way that it could ever be overturned. What about this? Give every coach one nuclear challenge per season where it's a challenge anything review. You are not making a rule to challenge pass interference. You have 32 coaches with one challenge in their pocket to utilize one time in 16 weeks. If they use it in week 5 and they get it right, they keep the challenge and they keep it going. But it's anything. It is anything. It is a hold. It is a pass interference. It is an offsides they could challenge. You have the technology to do it, but it's only one, so it won't slow down the game, but it's there just in case to save the season, and it is now up to the coach to use it at the right moment in time. Are you buying my new rule?
I've never been a proponent of the idea that it's on the coaches for challenges. I have always been a proponent of just have a sky judge or whatever you want, or just an NFL rules official who's in the booth watching the game just like we are at home. And the moment he says something that doesn't look right, he's the one who I don't like the fact that it's on the coach's period.
Have sky judge either. So
no, I know that. You're right.
They voted that down. They didn't. I don't even think they took that to a vote. Like, they took that off the things of to even
yes,
vote
you're right.
On.
Yeah, they so completely
I'm
tabled
saying
that.
Because of where we are now with no safety valve, I'm not telling you that we're gonna challenge pass interferences. I'm giving each coach like one,
but so
golden challenge. You call it that. A golden challenge.
The proposal of the golden challenge is, though, just like in a game, if you're correct, you continue to hold on to it, is what you're saying.
For the season,
yeah. For the season. So as long as you're right, you get to roll with the golden challenge. It's in your pocket.
Right. And this isn't something that in the third quarter you just throw. You know, you've got regular challenges for this. This is the golden challenge where you can challenge any rule.
The gold flag.
Even though it's not a reviewable rule.
You know Matt Patricia would accidentally throw the gold flag when he meant to throw the red flag. And I don't know if I like this type of power in Bill Belichick's hands.
Why?
Because he'd be right every single time. He would use this 17 times during the regular season.
But even Belichick gets all these draft picks wrong.
He gets the draft picks wrong. He never gets the rules wrong. He's the one who – they had to change the Mike Vrabel rule that he used in the playoffs last year, where he kept getting the delay of game call on the punt. Because he learned it from Belichick when he was on his staff. They changed that rule earlier this week, right?
They did today, yeah.
Today, yeah, so.
What do you think, Abdallah? You're going to poo-poo anything I say anyway.
No, that's not
the
true.
Golden challenge.
I don't. The name needs some working. We can workshop the name a little bit, because I don't see a shower of these flags coming out.
Yeah, too close.
I don't like something that you have that goes away for the entire year, because I feel like coaches will be so hesitant to use it that they'll end up just not using it.
But if you get it right, you keep it. So, for instance, week 11, the Bears are playing. Who are they playing week 11?
No, I understand what you get to keep it means. I understand what you're saying.
I'm saying any rule that's even like, say, all of a sudden, you see this
of all the weeks you
hold on Allen Robinson.
By the way, of all the weeks you pick, week 11 is the Bears' bye week. You had a 1 in 17 chance of hitting that right, and you got it wrong.
All right, week 12.
Week 12 is at the Packers. Perfect.
All right, so this is big. It's at the Packers. The Bears are down 2.
Yeah.
They're driving into field goal position. There's 2.5 minutes left.
Oh, God. And it doesn't matter. You had to mention a field goal, too.
Yes. And it doesn't matter. You could use this within 2 minutes. You could use it. It's a golden challenge, so you could use it whenever. Allen Robinson is trying to get off the jam, and one of the defensive backs on Green Bay is holding him, and it's obvious. But because you're playing in Green Bay, you're getting the hometown calls from these officials, and no one threw a flag. But it was obvious. And the Bears coaches on the sideline sees Allen Robinson getting held. And now, all of a sudden, you can take out. Matt Nagy can whip out his golden challenge. Look at me while I whip this out. And he throws it on the field. And now, all of a sudden, you're putting in under review that Allen Robinson was being held.
In that scenario, yes. Well,
But here's the thing. It's the NFL. In this scenario, what if it's completely obvious and they still don't give Matt Nagy the call?
You're probably right.
And then we're arguing about how he should still have his golden challenge.
All day Monday, Matt Nagy blew his golden challenge.
Through Monday till the next game. Ugh.
Think about the sponsorship opportunities. McDonald's, the Golden Arches can sponsor the golden challenge. They go under a special review area.
Oh, this is a different review area?
Yes, it's the golden review area.
That's a good call. You can see, you can already hear.
Time to hit the showers this golden opportunity.
You can already hear Al Michaels doing the read. This golden challenge is brought to you by the Golden Arches.
I can only bring this up on a Waddle vacation day, by the way. You guys know that, right?
Yeah, for sure. He'd immediately, he'd be hammering you for sure.
I don't like, because coaches are conservative in nature.
I don't want the coaches to have to do the challenges. Take it away from them in general.
You're right with the premise. They should get it right without the coaches. But this is the safety net. This is the
what
this
if?
is This is what's his face who went over the volcano.
Oh, what's his name? What's his face? The Walenda.
The Walenda guy.
Okay, what
he
if
made a big deal about the Walenda, and the next thing you know, he's got this this chain attached to him. Okay, now all of a sudden, this is the chain that the coach has, the Golden Challenge, where they're going to screw it up. The NFL officials are going to screw it up so badly, you get one time in the moment of the season where you get to save your life.
What if we make it even more weird, and once a game, you get two coach challenges, but once a game, a player can throw a challenge flag? So if Allen Robinson thought he was held, he could be like, no, this is my challenge.
They always get it. The players are always wrong. I caught it. Throw the flag. I promise you. They show the replay.
And like a captain,
close.
You have to elect who gets the challenge every week.
I don't like the fact that a season now can get ruined and there's no way to save it.
You just need a sky judge. Meller's right. You just need a sky judge.
But the NFL. Well,
so no, you're right. What is the NFL's reluctance?
Well, they're gonna practice with a form of it during the preseason, whatever preseason we get.
Won't even happen.
Yeah, the one year we know there's not going to be any preseason.
312-332-3776. What do you think about the Golden Challenge? And then things that you'll never do before, or if you want to weigh in on the baseball fight, we'll play a Jeff Passan, who is great with us on the latest in the negotiations. All these minor leaguers, by the way, are now without jobs. That was just announced recently as well. We'll bring that news coming up next.
What is your name, please?
Waddle and Sylvie.
Follow us on the gram at Waddle and Sylvie and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
A lot of great calls today at 312-332-3776. We continue throw around some of the things. The NFL really decided to do nothing, not adopt a new rule, really. No 4th and 15 onside kick. There is the safety net that is... it was a disaster. It was a disaster as far as the way they governed the pass interference review. That's on them, though. Doesn't mean that the rule was bad to put it in place. What happened to the Saints should never happen. And at least there was something put in place in the NFL last year to have that as a safety net. But the NFL screws up the catch. So, of course, they screw up the review for what is pass interference. And they screwed it up so colossally that they made even a bigger gaffe this week by saying, now there's no way ever to look at this going forward. Even though one day we think that's a pass interference, and then the next week that's not a pass interference, now we're not even going to review it. So now a team can get their season ruined by something like that again. And I think that's the shame, and that's why I'm only half joking with the Golden Challenge. You know, let a coach once a year challenge anything.
The one thing is, what is the NFL's reluctance to actually, I mean, I'm trying to understand, why do they not want a sky judge? Are they so afraid of hurting the officials, the referee on the field, their feelings by like overruling them if they make a bad call? Because I don't understand why you wouldn't want to just make the best calls possible. And when we're all sitting at home watching the clear, obvious mistakes being made, like we have HD TVs everywhere now. Why is it a problem for the NFL to adopt having a sky judge or just an official in the stands to go ahead and overrule bad calls?
Yeah, I wanted you to clarify for the layman when we keep throwing out sky judge. The sky judge is used in college, right? And this is a referee in the press box who is watching the game in real time and has a video monitor as well to review stuff. And he can pause things and make a call like he's on the field, but he can do it from the press box, yes?
Yeah, and Abdallah, correct me if I'm wrong, but like the term sky judge came about from, was it the Alliance Football League, or was it actually the XFL?
It was the Alliance of American Football.
They're the ones who brought in the term, quote, sky judge. That's
and
right.
The colleges usually use it for
targeting, right?
For the targeting rule to determine if it was targeting or not.
So it's not really like as much in play in college, but the AAF, the Alliance, whatever, football league, the AFF, was the one that first brought about the idea of Sky Judge. Remember, they folded so quickly, though, that we kind of forgot where it came from.
So quickly.
But, like, I don't understand, like, what is the problem for with getting a call right? Or do they just, does the NFL just love the idea of people talking about their league, even if it's because of mistakes made?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a good point. Right. Any publicity is good publicity. Mellor, can we go to San Francisco first? Eric and San Fran, you're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Eric?
Hey, Sylvie. All the best to you.
Thank you.
You got to think about this. Your golden call that the coach gets, right?
The golden challenge. Like
golden challenge, right. Isn't there like a hold in every play? And if you're challenging like some pass interference that can save your season, and it gets like reversed, then the other team says, "Well, there was a hold on there," and then the two penalties are offset, and it goes back to more of this nonsense that you just talked about. Like, does the NFL just like talking about whether it's good or not? All these stupid replays.
Well, like to me, you're right about the whole. This is the egregious challenge. This is the obvious. Like, if it's some mundane call, you're going to lose it for the year, and then all of a sudden you're without it, and you can't save a game or save a season. This is like the challenge that you only use in case of emergency, the break glass challenge. You don't do an in the trenches thing. It's only something at a big moment that is like 99%. Obvious to everybody in America.
I like that, Sylvie. So you actually, to add to the drama of the whole situation, you have a big black box or like a glass case on the sidelines with a golden challenge flag inside it. So you actually have to break the glass,
yes,
to throw it onto the field.
You're starting, like Khalil Mack has to come over and break the glass.
Or Akeem Hicks, perfect. He doesn't have to hang up a phone. He can just smash some glass.
Stop it. Don't. Come on. Bob in Buffalo Grove, you're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Bob?
Hey, how are you guys?
We're good.
My question out there is, all of a sudden this year it's legalized gambling, so a lot more people, there's a lot more money on games, a lot more because there's more casual fan will throw a 20, 25 on. So now the NBA's got just a flag in their pocket when they want to control a game, control a point spread, control who they want to be in a playoff if they want to use it that way. I mean, it's a free play for them.
What do you mean?
Why take it away from the game? Even if it didn't work last year, so what? Just use it, and if the refs don't like it like they did last year, they'll forget it. They'll call, your call's no good. Okay,
right.
But at least have it in your back pocket.
Right. No, that's okay. I didn't understand you at first, Bob. Thanks. That's my biggest issue. Like, they decided to just quit when something didn't work, instead of going to the root of the issue. The root of the issue is that Al Riveron dude who sits in New York and 1 week feels one way, and the next week he feels another way. So he rules separately instead of getting all these guys in the room and saying, guys, this is the rule. Here's what it is. If it's a clear and obvious thing, which still leaves some subjectivity there, but for the most part, you understand, clear and obvious, we reverse it. We screwed it up reviewing it. It doesn't mean that we should get rid of the rule just because we simply messed it up on our own. That's what pissed me off the most. Matt on the Edens. Hey, Matt, you're on ESPN 1000.
Hey, guys. Hey, Sylvie. Good luck to you. I'm actually on the way home from treatment myself, so wishing you good luck.
Very good. What are you fighting, if you don't mind me asking?
Multiple myeloma. It's rare blood cancer, so.
Well, best of luck and stay strong. And I'm here with you. So anytime you need anything, you call me. You hear me?
Yeah. Cheers, buddy. I appreciate it. I want to call in because, FIFA and a lot of the European soccer leagues have this fourth official, and it's done really, really well. I think they get all of the calls right, which is incredible. And I agree with the points being made. Like, what does the NFL have against getting the calls right? The downside of the fourth official is it slows down the flow of a soccer game. You don't really have that issue in the NFL because you have these natural breaks. So I think the eye in the sky, fourth official, whatever you want to call it, it's a great solution. I just don't understand the hesitation in going towards that.
Thanks. All the best to you again.
See, VAR sucks is what he's talking about. mostly because it's affected my team negatively.
What is it called?
VAR, video assistant referee. That's what he's talking about, where they basically review any critical goal or key penalty.
And like, you should see it, Sylvie. It's ridiculous. The team will be celebrating a goal. It'd be amazing. And then all of a sudden, the ref is pointing to his ear. He's got his finger in his ear because he's listening. And all of a sudden, he just points to the sky. And then you know, you're like, no, not VAR.
I've heard you. I know. I've not known what you guys were. You hate this. Yeah,
I hate it. I hate it so much.
I would say it's routinely blasted on Twitter and every other social media.
But he said they get it right. He just told me.
So that's where they do get the calls correct. But this is where the whole spirit of the rule, like a guy, whether or not he'll be offside, his shoulder will be slightly over and across the offside line. And this is where soccer fans start to lose their minds because they say the idea of offside is
It's like the baseball thing.
Or like a handball. It's an unintentional handball or something, within the letter of the law.
It's like when a player gets caught stealing because he slides slightly off of the bag, even after he'd actually, you know, been safe initially.
Right, right. And remember, too, the hockey offsides have gotten so technical, too, with where the blade of, you know, the skate is and everything.
You know, and this, I started thinking about this, and I started looking it up because of you talking about the pass interference call. Do you remember last year there was the play DeAndre Hopkins? There was a clear and blatant pass interference. It was the Texans against the Ravens, and it was like week 11 or 12, and it was fairly early in the game. And so, like, the Texans, it would have been a critical. He was in the end zone, and it was a clear pass interference by Marlon Humphrey, the Ravens defender. And I remember it being a huge deal, and they did not call pass interference on that specific play. And it just basically reinforced that for 11 or 12 weeks, they had no idea, no matter what you challenged for pass interference, it was almost never going to be called. And then, for whatever reason, it was like the league.
It flipped.
Yes, the league had like a memo sent around to all the referees. All right, let's get serious about this. And it seemed like they were finally on the right path for the final 5 weeks or whatever it happened to be. And then, for whatever reason now, they decide, no, we don't want to deal with the hassle.
And that's what I mean. It wasn't the rule that was bad. You handled it bad. So fix that problem, not take it away and make now teams subjected to these bad calls. 312-332-3776. Speaking of admitting to making mistakes, one championship coach here in Chicago said, I screwed up. And he's going back in time, and we'll play it for you next.
Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
Follow at Waddle and Sylvie and at TWaddle87 on Twitter.
To you by the Home Loan Expert. The housing market is really heating up, and it's about to take off, get pre-approved today with their five-minute loan approval. I just went through this when I refinanced. It was the easiest way. It's only available at thehomeloanexpert.com. Let Ryan Kelly know that Waddle and Sylvie sent you. All right. Joe Maddon was talking to Bob Casas. How did this come up, Abdallah, with them looking back at the Cubs World Series? Is it because it was on ESPN?
What was it? They ran this today's, what day is it? It's Thursday? I don't even know anymore. Today is Thursday. On Tuesday night, the ESPN reran the Game 7 of the World Series, and Joe Maddon was on with Carl Ravitch, and Tim Kirkjian was on, and like Chris Bryant was on, and Anthony Rizzo was on. Right. Afterwards, Bob Costas and Joe Maddon did something for Cameo. Now, it was sponsored by Cameo. It wasn't through Cameo. It was sponsored on Cameo on, like, YouTube or whatever. It doesn't matter. On the internet, where they did, like, a 30-minute interview, basically, talking about the World Series run and his time with the Cubs.
Okay, so the game plays on. You're up 6-3 in the eighth. And, of course, the plan is to go to Aroldis Chapman. Now, going back to Sunday, Chapman had the first eight-out save of his career, but that's a one-run game. You got to leave him in there. That's the thing to do, and he locks it down. You win at Wrigley. You go to Cleveland. You have a big lead in Game 6, and Chapman comes in again, and then you pad the lead further while he's still technically in the game. You send him back out there. What was your thinking there, knowing that you're going to win this game and it's going to be a Game 7 and you're likely going to have to use him again?
Well, I mean, just the last part, I should not have sent him back out in the ninth. There was everything happened kind of quickly. Riz hit a homer that put us up by more runs. And I honestly thought about this actually the day before. I did not want to run away from a crucial moment in game six and have Aroldis be in the bullpen and have us lose the game. So when it got hot again, it was versus Lindor. The Lindor hitting right-handed again. Aroldis had to cover first base, I believe, on a chopper. But I wanted him in that moment. And then we were still, was it 7-2 at that time when he was in the
seven
game?
7-2, yeah.
And still, again, it's Cleveland and Cleveland, and it's a game we can't lose. And I'd already burned him there in a crucial moment because I thought he was the right guy. I should have gotten him out starting the ninth inning and not have him throw four pitches. That's out of all the things I did in that series, that's the one thing I should have done differently. And I knew that. We didn't get any. I think it was Stropey that came in at that point. Should have gotten Stropey ready sooner. He probably would tell you that he could have come in a game, and that's probably true. But when you're playing game six and can't lose it, trying to get to number seven, it's almost the same in my mind's eye, and all bets are off. So I wanted to roll this to get out of that inning. He did. He pitched the next inning. He did well. And then I should have just jettisoned him after Rizzo's homer.
See, I've heard Joe Maddon say that he believes that the one mistake he made was that game six, leaving Chapman in two. He will not, though, say that he made any mistake in game seven, whether it was not staying with Hendricks longer. Like Hendricks, he had the quick hook with Hendricks, and then he promised that he wouldn't put Lester in during a dirty inning, and sure enough, he put him in a dirty inning, and then Lester's cruising along in the eighth, and then all of a sudden Lester gets a hiccup, and then he doesn't stick with Lester anymore, and that's when he goes to Chapman, and people still argue back and forth over what Joe Maddon did. So
he just continues to get vilified by the fan base.
See, I don't know. I mean, I'm mixed on it because I didn't agree with a lot of the decisions. I'm going to miss Joe Maddon as the manager. I think Joe Maddon doesn't get the credit that he deserves as the Cubs manager. But he pissed me off several times, you know? I mean, I've talked about that John Lackey in relief outing in the NLCS in 17 a lot. I mean, does he get vilified, or do people say that sometimes he overmanages and likes to make the cute move like we talked about with Matt Nagy? Like, Matt Nagy would rather run for 6 yards with Cordero Patterson than to David Montgomery between the tackles.
Well, I mean, I think he continues to get vilified because Cubs fans say that they won in spite of him. You know, like, because of his actions, see, like, they went into that rain delay and they said, you know what, forget this guy. We're winning this.
I was critical of Maddon the day game seven, when they won it. I remember sending out a tweet that Weil referenced a lot because I said basically that Theo and Jed had Maddon-proofed the team. And what I meant by that was, in terms of his in-game management, he left a lot to be desired. But they had put together a team that was able to overcome what he would occasionally do in over-managing his bullpen. And look, what he did in terms of setting the tone for the clubhouse, I don't think can be praised enough. Because, I think you agree with this, Sylvie. That Cubs team, I don't believe, wins in 2016 without Joe Maddon setting the tone the way he did, not just in 2016, but even in 2015. You know what
I
mean?
I always say that.
And so he
Fred and I, you know, Huebner doesn't think managers matter. If the Cubs don't get Joe Maddon in 15, I don't believe they win in 16. So I think anyone who says they won in spite of Joe Maddon, you're putting the cart before the horse.
Yeah.
Because the horse was Maddon. When Maddon got there, the two things that had to happen for the Cubs to continue with the evolution process under Theo: John Lester needed to sign here, and they needed to get Joe Maddon as their manager. Those two things happened in 15.
Yes. So I think they won in spite of some of his managerial decisions, but what he did for the team as a whole cannot be downplayed in any way, because I just don't think they would have won the World Series in 2016 had he not been brought in 2015.
Look at the way the past Cubs teams used to buckle under the pressure under Lou Piniella, swept out of 07 or 08, buckled under the pressure under Dusty. You know, that's what Joe did well. Well, it didn't matter if it was 108 years. Even if he screwed up a decision, that team wouldn't buckle under the pressure like past Cubs teams did. And I thought that's he started that culture, and I don't think he gets the credit there. But, yeah, I think I don't know if it's vilified by saying he made a couple of mistakes, but it's forever going to be debated. 312-332-3776. Where are we currently in the negotiation between baseball with the owners and the players? Jeff Passan has the latest next.